Morning, everybody. I'd like to go ahead and call Senate Finance Committee to order February 17th, 2022. With me today is co-chair Senator Bishop, Senator Olson, Senator Wilikowski, Senator Wilson, Senator Hoffman, and myself, Stedman. Senator Von Imhoff may be joining us later. She's at other meetings. On today's agenda, we've got the governor's budget amendments, and we'll have him up in a minute, the OMB director. And then we're going to swap the chairmans, and we'll talk about the capital budget supplementals. Senator Bishop will be doing that. And we have some folks online to help possibly with questions if the trustee OMB director needs a lifeline. So with that, I'd like to go ahead and call Mr. Neil Steininger, director of the Office of Management and Budget for the administration, to come forward. And he's been here many, many times. One of his, if not, I'm sure it's his favorite committee. At least this morning, it's his favorite committee at 9 o'clock. So, Mr. Steininger, if you could take us through the operating side, and then we'll do the FY22 supplemental a little bit, and we'll switch chairmen, and we'll talk about the capital.
Good morning. For the record, Neil Steininger, Director of the Office of Management and Budget. And just to orient folks that are in the committee and online watching, I'll be following along on spreadsheets here that lists out the individual budget amendments. I'll primarily be zooming in on the right-hand side on the screen here, but on the left-hand side for each amendment, it gives you the page number in the backup packet that's posted on the OMB website where you can find additional details on each amendment item, as well as telling you what section, page, and line within the given appropriation bill this is amending. But with that, I'll move over here to the right-hand side where it has a brief description as well as the financial information about the individual budget amendment.
Okay, and we may try to do it a little different today, Mr. Steininger, rather than have you go through the whole page, just kind of do one item at a time, and we'll just see how it flows. It might be smoother than having you go through and then have multiple questions on different issues in different different orders, because I don't know what questions the committee members may ask on any item. So let's try that and see how smooth it goes. And if it goes smooth, we'll continue that for the day. If not, we'll revert back to our one page at a time.
All right, certainly. So item one is in the Department of Administration, Retirement and Benefits. This is $75,000 from retirement system funds to explore the ability for teachers in the state of Alaska to enter into the Social Security system as part of their retirement benefits.
And you want to explain that a little bit more?
Yes. So currently, teachers in the state of Alaska, members of TERS, the Teachers Retirement System, don't pay into Social Security or the alternative to Social Security, SBS, that PERS employees pay into. And so this is funding within the Division of Retirement and Benefits in Department of Administration to do an amount of outreach to kind of ensure that people are educated, that they are able to vote to opt into the Social Security system if they so choose. This is more of an outreach campaign, not actually necessarily advocating for that change, but making sure that it's understood that that's an option.
Okay. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Steininger, as you look down the columns there, it looks like it's coming from other funds. Which other funds are we talking about besides UGF or DGF?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, the other funds being referred to here are the retirement system funds. So that's able to be paid out of the retirement system itself.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And I think for clarity for those watching, the teachers' retirement system opted out many years ago out of Social Security. And they can also opt in. That's not a decision for the legislature. That's a decision for, as I recall, individual school districts. And it has to be requested by the school districts and stuff. So, and then on this subject, just real quick, tomorrow, we're gonna have an update on the retirement system from the actuary analysis done every year by the Department of Retirement and Benefits. So we'll be looking at our unfunded liability and the health of our retirement and healthcare systems tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. Any other questions on item number one? Next item, please.
Item number two impacts multiple components and divisions within the state budget. It's a salary negotiation with labor, trades, and crafts. The total is about $5 million, all funds, $1.6 million of which will be paid with unrestricted general funds.
Okay, we have any questions on that? Okay, next, Senator Bishop.
Could you go just a little more detail on exactly what the total funds are for? Is this it's an annual increase, or is it a new contract, or a supplemental addition to existing contracts, or can you give us a little more detail, or for me, anyway?
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, we can get you the monetary term sheet that goes and breaks down the exact detail of the cost of living adjustment and any other terms that were changed in the contract. This is, you know, a recent negotiation with the Labor, Trades, and Crafts Union, changing monetary terms in the contract itself.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. So that's why it was not included in the original submission of the budget.
Yes, Chair Stemmen, just by way of kind of explanation, we try to incorporate any union negotiations that happened prior to December 15th in the original budget submission, but often those negotiations go past that date. They're the statutory deadline for when those monetary term sheets need to be submitted to the legislature, which I'm just blanking on that exact deadline. I believe it's day 45 or day 60, but I can get back to you on that.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Next item.
Item three is an amendment to an item in the Department of Commerce Corporation's Business Professional Licensing. In the governor's budget, $1.5 million in unrestricted general fund was included to offset the impact of a freeze in fee changes for licensees. Upon kind of further review of where those costs are, the department has determined that they only really need $1.1 million in unrestricted general fund to offset the impact of those, that freeze and fee changes, and so we're reducing that 1.5 by 400,000.
Senator Wilson.
Yeah, what's the impact sort of on the investigative costs for these license holders for these rates?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, so the investigative costs are an aspect included in the calculation of the fees to the licensees, and so often that can be, for a large investigation, can be a big portion of that cost that goes on to the licensee. However, what we're trying to do here is to ensure that we don't have to increase those license costs by funding some of the activities in the division with unrestricted general fund and try to avoid some of the impacts that those activities can have on the licensee.
Follow up?
I guess that the investigations are still going on. I don't think they stop within a lot of these boards. And I guess what efforts are we going to do? Because sooner or later, you know, these bills are going to come due. And instead of using UGF, I thought this was supposed to be an area where it's a fee provided by the licensees instead of being paid for by the state of Alaska.
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, that's definitely the case. You know, the goal is to have this be a self-supporting system, corporations, business, professional licensing. So we're working with the division on, you know, trying to get a better understanding of what was driving up those license fee increases and work with them on a plan to not have to require this unrestricted general fund appropriation in future years. But for the time being, you know, to avoid that cost just being borne on the licensees, we think it's appropriate to make this appropriation to give the time to the division to work through some of those issues and try to find different ways of funding costs like investigations, because we also don't want investigations to stop happening, because they're definitely necessary for the health of the licensing programs. But I think the division could definitely give you a much more robust discussion on some of those individual activities operationally of what they're trying to do to address cost.
Thank you.
Okay. Next item, please.
So the next item, item four, has a matching item later on the spreadsheet. There's just a technical error in the budget submission in December that was caught by the Division of Legislative Finance. Notice the technical error, and this is to correct that. An item that was in the language section omitted the language flag in the system.
Okay. Senator Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So what's the intention of the $7 million for the trade promotion?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, there was $7 million in ARPA funding that was appropriated to the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute in last year's budget. The way it was appropriated was as a language item, which has a technical transaction in the next year's budget to reverse that item out. That technical transaction was just put in the wrong place in the budget system. And so this negative $7 million is offset by a positive $7 million later to shift where that technical transaction is. But that $7 million was used by ASME to support activities in seafood marketing, you know, as part of some of the economic development initiatives that were put in last year's budget.
Thank you. Okay, next item, please.
The next item, item five, is another bargaining unit salary adjustment, this one for the Alaska Correctional Officers Association, $4.7 million, of which $4.4 million is coming from unrestricted general fund. This is throughout the Department of Corrections.
Okay, next item.
The next item here is in the Department of Corrections population management in the FY23 budget. There are additional positions added in the Department of Corrections. This is a technical adjustment to the description in that transaction to clarify where those positions are going to be located and provide a little bit more information that came up during conversations in subcommittee and the other body.
What was your last sentence? Came up where?
Came up in conversations with subcommittee and the other body, and so this is providing just additional detail to this initiative in the Department of Corrections, and adding some of those discussions into the, you know, the technical documentation that goes with the budget.
Okay, Senator Olson, and then Senator Wilson. Senator Olson, did you have a question? Oh, Senator Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Have you estimated the cost savings of the correctional officers over time if those positions were filled that are being requested?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, the filling of the positions, the cost savings are effectively offset by the salaries paid by the new positions that you hire. So it's not necessarily a net cost savings to fill the positions. It's you're saving on some of your overtime costs, but you're also then filling and paying for those full-time positions, and saving on some of the issues with, retention and burnout amongst the staff.
A follow-up then is, some of these positions then are for a new booking unit in Highland, which is already sort of under construction and being built before it's the item in the budget is being approved. So if it's not approved, how will you find the funding to cover what's already been built?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, the booking unit in Highland is a capital budget request that we have before the legislature, so it hasn't been appropriated yet. Currently, they're doing that booking at Highland in effectively a hallway. They still have seen that operationally is better than having both the male and female inmates booked in at the Anchorage Correctional Center. Splitting that out and moving to Highland, they've seen a lot of operational, kind of just functional benefits from that. And that's why we're requesting the additional money in the operating budget to support that full time, as well as the capital budget to build it out. So if that, budget request were rejected by the legislature and we couldn't move forward with that plan, we would lose some of those operational benefits to, safety of the staff and safety of the inmates. And Department of Corrections could definitely give you a much better rundown. I'm sure they'd be happy to, take you to the facility and show you what they're talking about here in the, hallway that needs to be expanded to a real booking unit.
Okay, and for those watching at home, Senator Wilson is in charge here of the subcommittee for corrections. He's the point man for the committee on that subcommittee. That's why his questions are probably more detailed than other members at the moment. Other questions on item number six? Item number seven.
On item number seven, this is an adjustment to the TVET program. The TVET program initially in the December budget comes in with an estimated amount. The department updates that amount during the course of the session. This is an update to the most current TVEP estimates from the Department of Labor. You'll see a couple other transactions related to this adjustment throughout the budget because TVEP funding goes out per statute to a number of organizations, both within the state and outside of.
Okay, have any questions on this item? Okay, next item.
Item eight is in the Department of Environmental Conservation. As they're looking at the transfer of the EVOS Trustee Council from the Department of Fish and Game to Department of Environmental Conservation, they've identified some costs that were previously reduced out of the Fish and Game budget that they think are actually necessary for the, you know, effective management of that organization.
Okay, next item.
Next item, item nine, is also in the Department of Environmental Conservation, $125,000 for operational costs in the Environmental Health Laboratory, primarily utilities and maintenance costs. This is paid for through federal indirect rates in the department.
Okay, and then can you help us on why this wasn't anticipated for the original budget submission if it's dealing with what appears to be anticipated costs? Is there new information that came in, or can you help me with that?
Yes, Chair Simmons. So this cost, the additional costs in the Environmental Health Lab, were actually a supplemental request that we made last year and a supplemental request that we've made this year. So the fiscal year 21 budget and fiscal year 22 budget. Initially, you know, in conversations between OMB and the department, we thought this would be a kind of a temporary increase in costs that they're experiencing at the Environmental Health Lab. But in investigating the FY22 supplemental requests that we put forward as part of that budget, it became clear that this was going to be an ongoing increase in costs at that facility. So effectively, we were hoping this would be a, you know, short-term increase, but it's looking to be something that will need to be sustained longer term.
Okay. Senator Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Typically, this is funded out of UGF. So what federal receipts is this now coming out of, and why the change from UGF to these fed funds?
Through the Chair, Senator Wilson, you know, this also in conversations with the department on the FY22 request, when it became clear that this was an ongoing cost, we started to work with the department on, you know, what are their available resources for overhead costs like this. And in that discussion, you know, we found that the federal indirect rate that the department collects off of its various federal programs is eligible to be used for these costs. And so we're able to fit this within that negotiated indirect with the federal government.
Okay. Next item, please.
Item 10 is in the Spill Prevention and Response, or SPAR, division within DEC. This is part of the adjustments that OMB made to adjust for the lack of a reverse sweep in the fiscal year 22 budget. However, upon discussing with the department a little bit more, we discovered that our adjustment of a couple million dollars in SPAR was off by a little bit from what their revenue projections are. So this is just to correct that omission.
Senator Wilson.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. So the SPAR funding is going to eventually, if it was kept within the CBR, we would have seen a total utilization of those funds within 3 to 4 years. Is the administration coming up with a plan to raise the revenue or have a bill dropped or proposal to the legislature in terms of making sure that we have enough revenue to offset the deficits of the SPAR program in ongoing years?
Through the Chair, Senator Wilson, I'll speak briefly on it, but I might defer to the Department of Environmental Conservation to kind of give a more robust explanation of their plan, and we can provide that right into the committee. But over the last several years, the department has been trying to make reductions to get SPAR down to a more sustainable level in line with the revenues collected, because you're right, prior to any of these issues related to the CBR sweep, SPAR was sort of operating at a deficit and drawing down savings. And so we've been looking at that from the cost side, and I know there have been legislative proposals on the revenue side, and we could provide you with a little more information on, you know, what the department thinks is the best avenue.
Yeah.
I guess as a follow-up, are there any issues not having these funds being into a particular account and having the funds that are from those fuel taxes go into the UGF versus into a specialized SPAR fund account?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, this is definitely one of the kind of odder problems caused by the sweep. The way the SPAR funds come in, that, you know, nickel per barrel tax that goes into spill prevention, it sits in a holding account in the general fund and then is appropriated in the following year into the SPAR account. And so it's that holding account in the general fund that's swept. So the SPAR account itself keeps its funding, but the money flowing into SPAR is the portion that sweeps. And so looking at, you know, as we're trying to look at some of these budget issues brought up by the sweep, this is one where maybe the structure of how it's been appropriated in the past or how it's structured, the flow of the money is structured, is something that needs to be investigated. In the fiscal year 23 budget, we focused on just making sure that we can make the programs work in the next year and figure out some of these issues to figure out what the fixes are needed. And I think SPAR is definitely one that's going to require some attention if we continue to operate in a sort of post-sweep budget structure.
I guess
Mr. follow up and then we'll go to Senator Bishop.
I guess then, are we at any legal risk or litigation because we have this funding issue in this account or any other accounts that were swept?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, I think I would probably defer that to Department of Law. But what I would say is these are, you know, revenues to the state, and the legislature does retain the power of appropriation. So I think that would cover, you know, some of those questions like that. But I definitely defer the kind of more robust conversation on that to law.
I think the short answer to that, Senator Wilson, the answer is yes. We're waiting for the audit to come out before I feel comfortable with the in-depth discussion at the committee. Let the auditors do their process. I expect to have substantial problems with the audited financial statements. And my expectation is we'll end up in the third branch of government, in the courts, to sort it out, because we have to follow generally accepted accounting principles, not do whatever we want to do at the end of every fiscal year. So that's coming attractions. Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Steiniger, you very rarely ever misspeak, but I'm not saying that you did, but I thought I heard you say a nickel a gallon for the SPAR fund, and I think it's only 0.9% that goes to the SPAR fund, but somebody can check my math because I can't remember what I had for lunch last week.
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, I may have misspoke, and I can get that exact breakdown. I know DEC has shown me many times a very nice flow chart of how the money flows into the account, and we can provide that to the committee.
When we come back after the public dissemination of the audited financial statements, we'll be, like I mentioned earlier, walking through all the accounts that were swept or should have been swept. And this will be one of them that we'll have to take a little bit more time with, because there are some complexities with it. Some of the accounts are going to be pretty clean and they're not going to have a problem, but there'll be several that do. And we can go, Senator Bishop, we can go into the detail at that time also on the dollars and pennies that flow in great detail on these accounts, so we clarify this issue so we don't have reoccurring problems with it. That's the goal. Any other question on number 10? Number 11, please.
So number 11 is within the Office of Children's Services in the Department of Family and Community Services frontline social workers. So these are workforce stabilization bonuses for new and existing staff totaling $2.3 million or $2.2 million UGF, $1.3 federal funds. So this is part of an overall initiative totaling about $10 million in all funds for the Office of Children's Services addressing, you know, several different operational areas, which cover the next handful of amendments here in this sheet.
Okay, next item.
So item 12 is also within frontline social workers. This is $170,000 to manage traumatic stress for the actual child welfare workers themselves. A lot of these initiatives here within the Office of Children's Services, they're both trying to address some of these stressors on staff that are causing recruitment and retention issues, as well as some of the issues with the actual children themselves and ensuring those children are supported. This is specifically a staff support issue.
And again, on this, can you help us with why this wasn't in the original budget submission?
Chair Stedman, this OCS initiative was something that was being worked on in during, you know, the November-December timeframe, but some of the details here and how some of these interplay with federal funding wasn't fully worked out in time for inclusion in the December 15th budget. And so, yeah, the amendment, bringing this in on the amendment deadline, just allowed the department a little bit more time to fully work through this initiative and make sure they were addressing all the issues that they needed to, and making sure that the interplay with federal funding and the Office of Children's Services was well sought out.
Okay, thank you. We'll go on to next item.
So the next item in frontline social workers is to add four long-term non-permanent staff. So these are specifically supervisory staff that will oversee some of the new and tenured staff in the office. And it's sort of a surge in that supervisory capacity to help them work through some of the significant retention issues they're undergoing right now.
Okay. Next item.
The next item is for field training, to compensate staff for field training that they will, you know, go out and receive and just provide adequate training to those child welfare workers.
Okay. Next item.
And the next item is an addition of 26 new field staff within the Office of Children's Services, totaling $2.8 million, 1.8 of which comes from state funds.
Senator Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I see this is also to support and train the co-signers of the Alaska Tribal Compact, Alaska Tribal Child Welfare Compact. There's already additional $1 million in the budget to support that. Is this on top of that additional million to support that effort?
Through the Chair, Senator Wilson, I'll give a brief explanation, but I believe we also have Kim Guay from the Office of Children's Services on that can explain the interplay maybe a little better than I. The amount that was in the fiscal year 23 budget on December 15th was the grant that goes to those tribal providers. This is money for staff at OCS to both increase the number of child welfare workers and help with that compact and help make that a successful relationship. And I think if Kim is on, with permission of the chair.
Yes. Yeah, just a second. Senator Wilson, you have a follow-up?
Yeah, before we hear from Kim, then, I see these items and just wonder how House Bill 151 we passed a few years ago has played an impact, because it seems that we're continuing to add more into retention and training. I thought that bill was supposed to be sort of a fix-it bill for some of these issues. Just wondering how that's working out there as well in terms of this additional request that we see before us in line 13 through 16.
Okay, if we can get some lifeline from the Director of the Office of Children's Services at Hess. She's online.
Yes, good morning, Chair Stedman. This is, for the record, this is Kim Guay, the Director of Office of Children's Services. Through the Chair, Representative Wilson, thank you for the question. House Bill 151 did surge protective services specialist staff, and what it did is it allowed us to try to cap caseload so they would slowly get cases as they came on. What you'll see in this line item, this is support staff for line workers. We have 60% turnover in our frontline staff, and so as of yet, we have not reaped the benefits of House Bill 151 because they're still leaving us at unprecedented rates, our staff are. And so this line item really is support staff that will unload some of our case-carrying staff, all the paperwork and things of that nature, so they could focus on working with children and families. And if I can pivot to the next question as far as the compact, we have identified 3 to 4 positions that are in this line item that will help the referrals of the work that OCS does to get that work to the tribal compacted partners that we are working with.
Follow-up questions?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess the first part was I thought 151 also had a retention and recruitment report that was to be developed and to help identify some of those areas of why folks are leaving so fast and quickly. And I guess where are the other 20-something positions going to go toward in terms of this on line 15 for the frontline social workers? If only 4 are going to tribal compact, where are the other 20 going?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, they are going around the state. And so primarily the large amount are social services associates. And so the social services associates, we call SSAs, they will be helping the line staff coordinate family contact between children and their parents, as well as helping with the numerous paperwork that is required by line staff. We do have some admin staff as well that will help complete some of the paperwork tasks and all the behind-the-scenes work that line workers are responsible for. And so in House Bill 151, there is a capped caseload. We're kind of in a cyclical problem because we cap our caseloads for our new workers according to House Bill 151, but the existing workers who are on the job longer than 6 months are carrying extremely high caseloads. Then they get burnout. They get tired of their high caseloads and being unsuccessful. They leave the agency, and those workers that were on capped caseloads now get to carry all those cases. And so we are trying to figure out ways to unload our line staff so they could work with families and children more intensely by allowing these 26 positions that we have proposed here to do the background work for the line staff.
One more question.
My
understanding, I'm talking with your predecessor during the coronavirus pandemic, was that that allowed the time to do the backlogs and the catch-up, and that they were projecting, I think, in calendar year 2020, around August, that you were pretty much caught up with the backlogs and the caseworkers were finally above water, no longer treading. So I guess what happened between 2020 and now in terms of the backlog seemed to come back.
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, thank you for that question. When you're talking about the backlog, that's our investigations and assessment area. And so what had happened when the pandemic started, we saw a massive decrease of calls coming into the Office of Children's Services due to the lack of mandated reporters access with children. We have since seen the call volume go back up. Our backlog, we're still maintaining our backlog at a reasonable level. We have seen it tick up a little bit. Where we're concerned about primarily is our family services. So this is the population of the children who are in care. We have 3,000 children in care. That has not changed from the beginning of the pandemic to now. We might vacillate, maybe 50 children between now and then. But that is what we're talking about. What we have found through the pandemic is there's a lot more work that's necessary to find placement, for example. Children are coming in with more complex needs than we've seen in the past. We're struggling to, foster homes. We've seen a decline in foster homes, and then we're struggling to, our workers are spending hours and hours, days trying to find placements for children that we haven't had to do in the past. So we have seen some benefit in the investigations and assessment, but we're not feeling that benefit in the family services realm. And that's really a primary focus for us.
Okay, that's fine.
Because those children.
Thank you. We're going to move. Senator Bishop, do you have a question here?
No, next one, sir.
So we're going to move on. Next item, 16.
Item 16 is $100,000 for a vocational program for children leaving foster care. So this is for providing vocational opportunities to those youths.
Senator Bishop.
Just a comment for the department. I would just have a friendly suggestion that you reach out to the Department of Labor and see how you can leverage your funds with their federal funds for this workforce development for these youth that are aging out and into these voc ed programs, because we have some very good ones in the state.
Next item.
Item 17 is $200,000 is a partnership with the Alaska Impact Alliance in support of evidence-based program development.
Okay, next item.
Item 18 is $700,000 addition to the foster care special needs line item in the budget, and this is for increased support for those children with complex trauma that require some additional level of support for those foster parents taking in those kids.
So help me again why this something like this wouldn't have been in the original budget submission.
Chair Stedman, this, you know, while this line item specifically is just unrestricted general fund, it may not be part of that discussion I had earlier about making sure that they were addressing every need and making that alignment with federal funds. This was all part of a, you know, an overall package to address needs at OCS. And so the entire package was reviewed in whole within the executive branch to be put forward as, you know, a package to address some of these needs at OCS. And so having that additional time to bring it forward in an amendment package gave us that time to, you know, better look into where we would allocate these resources for the best need of the division.
Okay. Next item.
Item 31 is an addition of $1 million to foster care special needs, and this is to increase the age at which we continue to support children in the foster care system from 18 to 21.
Okay, and this would be permanent?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay, any questions on this? Number 20, please.
So item 20 is a technical fix in putting together the cost for the executive order, the addition of a department technology officer or the head of IT for the department, and the addition of an admin services director were added in the respective agencies where those types of positions live, the Office of Information Technology and OMB. However, the money within the Department of Family and Community Services to pay for those costs was unintentionally omitted.
Okay. Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Last year, we heard from the Department of Law and our legislative legal division that the executive order was unconstitutional because it required, it made substantive legal changes through an executive order rather than through legislation. The same issues continue under this new executive order, so I'm just wondering why the governor has not submitted legislation instead of this unconstitutional executive order.
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, I don't believe it's the opinion of the Department of Law that the executive order is unconstitutional, but I will allow them to get back in writing to address those concerns to the committee and provide a more robust response on that issue.
Okay. Next item.
In item 21, we're moving to the Department of Fish and Game. In subsistence research, they have received an additional $550,000 in federal funding that has become available, not through the infrastructure bill, but outside of that federal infrastructure bill, to address subsistence resources research.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This item has come up on numerous occasions at this committee, and a way of life on the Yukon and Kuskokwim is threatened because of lack of Chinook. There's been extensive research done, and now we're going to extend that for another $550,000 to put another research paper on our shelves. I personally think that more needs to be done in putting more salmon in the creeks, in our rivers, for the people that depend upon it, instead of relying upon assistance outside the state of Alaska from Bristol Bay to provide salmon on a temporary basis to those people that depend upon salmon. Chinook is the most prized salmon that provides sustenance to the people of the Yukon and Kuskokwim in terms of smoked salmon, salted salmon, frozen fillets, and in many cases is a daily part of their menu. But to rely upon the federal government to put another study on the books, I don't think is what Alaskans are looking for. I believe the state of Alaska needs to be upfront and putting dollars to put salmon in the stream so that people of Alaska can put food on the table. This is a food security issue that I believe needs 100, if not 1,000 times more attention for the people that are dependent upon salmon on a daily basis on the Yukon, in the Kuskokwim, and in all parts of Alaska. So I think, although well-intentioned, this is falling far short of the attention that the people of Alaska would expect the state of Alaska to do. So again, I ask that the administration look at this issue and come up with a supplemental to address this problem. I'm dismayed that we're looking at another study, more paperwork that people can't eat. They're not going to be able to put anything on their plate for how many more years? So again, the second time, I would request the administration to come forward with a supplemental request that is proactive, and the people of Alaska can see that we are working toward getting salmon back in our streams so that the people of Alaska can go out and work to get food on their table instead of ignoring the issue and forcing them to look at food assistance, food stamps, and other issues, because rural Alaska doesn't want that assistance. They want to be able to work and provide for themselves. So again, I would ask that this be taken more seriously, because I know the senator from Fairbanks across from me, they are sick and tired of not being able to go out and fish for Chinook. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I totally agree with what the senator from Bethel talked about. And whenever I see there's a study that's going to be going on, whenever other people see where the study's going on, they don't want necessarily another study to tell what happened, because they know what happened and what's happening now because they're living it. What they want to see is something that's done that'll find solutions to the lower numbers that are going up and down the Yukon River, specifically here, chum and king salmon. And so I think it's pretty evident that the Fish and Game Department has actually failed the people that are living and are depending upon this. And so why aren't we looking for solutions that are out there. You know, one of the things that my constituents have suggested is putting hatcheries and putting money into those kind of programs that will increase the number that are released into the river and then go back and will come back in several years. Because right now we're at a critical stage, and this is the second year that they've had no ability to go in and fish. And so because of that, you know, I think we need to be putting our money at someplace else besides another study. And that's the constituents, my constituents and people that live along the Yukon, that's their general mental state as well. So that's just something that I'm suggesting, that we, instead of doing more studies for somebody's PhD number or PhD paper, dissertation, that we get into something that's a little more proactive. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Bishop.
I'll be brief, but I concur with both my other rural colleagues, and also just want to add one thing. The kings are very important, the Chinook salmon, but the chum salmon are equally as important. That's what we power our freezers, where we put up our bulk fish, and it was a devastating. It was almost non-existent this year, the chum return. So I concur with both the other gentlemen. Thank you.
Okay. Next item.
So item 22, we're moving into the Department of Health. Item 22 and 24 are actually tied together in working with the Mental Health Trust. This item, this $900,000 crisis now continuum of care grants, was just simply placed in the wrong component during the process of incorporating the trust recommended budget into the governor's budget. And so you can see that shift of the $900,000, but no net change to the budget between these two items.
Okay.
Item 23 is $200,000 to engage in a partnership with several other parties to expand the Master of Social Work degree program at the university. And so the state of Alaska will be providing $200,000 a year for 2 years to this program, partnering with other organizations in order to expand that program at the University of Alaska.
Okay. Senator Wilson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, this probably would be for the university. But a few years ago, they decided to decrease this program, and they defunded it and closed positions in this program. Now they're bringing it back. Just wondering why the decrement and now why the increase going back and forth of that. So maybe the university can get back to on that question.
I don't see anybody online there, but we're going to have the university as a subcommittee of the whole here, and we can go into those details. But. Mr. Steininger, could you help a little bit with that question, or do you want to defer it completely to the university?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, I'll defer the, you know, the rationale behind individual university reductions to the university. Their budget process is, you know, a little bit different. They make, you know, independent decisions on how they manage to the level of funding appropriated to them. This here is a partnership that Health and Social Services is partnered to engaging with outside parties to try and support this area of need that's of specific benefit to Health and Social Services beneficiaries. And so they can definitely speak towards, you know, why they believe this is a good idea to support and to support the university that way.
For those, just as a reminder for those watching at home, these are supplemental requests from the governor that may or may not be included in the final budget. So, but we'll go into more detail with the university on that, and also I'm sure we'll have a discussion on the salmon issue. Maybe they can have some assistance there also. Okay, next item.
So item 24 again was tied to item 22 and is a technical adjustment. Item 25 is a new item put forward by the Mental Health Trust Authority that is a what is called the Open Beds Initiative in the Chronic Disease Prevention and Health Promotion. This is funded by the Trust Authority itself.
Okay, next item.
Item 26 is another adjustment to the TVET program and the amount of funding available.
Okay, next item.
Item 27.
Wait, just a second. Do you have a question on?
I do. 26? Sorry, Mr. Chair. It's actually on item number 25. The open beds. Doesn't the Department of Health and Social Services have this availability on their website currently, that they do have sort of an open beds for all their facilities that of behavioral health, substance abuse treatments, and for adults and youth?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, this is a recommendation that came from the Mental Health Trust themselves. I believe we do have Assistant Commissioner Rob from the Department of Health and Social Services who might be able to speak to this a little bit more, but this is some request that came from the trust themselves, not necessarily from the administration.
Hey, Mr. Rob, if you can help real quick on that question, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, this is Sylvan Robb, Assistant Commissioner at Department of Health and Social Services. Through the chair to Senator Wilson, the Open Beds program provides a real-time dashboard of the availability of treatment beds, and this is something that the trust has been highly engaged in. They're very invested in standing up the Crisis Now program, and this provides a tool in that toolbox.
Okay, and go ahead.
I guess, thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess the question is, doesn't the department already require the folks that they fund to do this on a daily basis already on their website?
Through the chair to Senator Wilson, the Open Beds is a dashboard that has existed for a number of years, and so the trust is putting it forward again to continue having this availability.
Okay, so I think on this, we can bring this matter back to the mental health when we'll have their budget in front of us in the entirety also sometime in the future. Next item.
Item 27 is in the Workforce Investment Board. There's an addition of $1.7 million in workforce investment grants from the federal government. These are not associated with the federal infrastructure bill. These are outside of that.
Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Steiniger, on the backup down here, I understand the expansion of 391 over 4 years. The 673 and change, or 671, it says per year. For how many years?
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, I'd have to get back to you on how many years that will last.
Please, and that's for public health response for community health workers. So we've got a 6,500 person gap in the healthcare industry in the state. So we'll be having a conversation here at the table to further help our community health and hospitals around the state.
Okay, next item.
On item 28 is another adjustment to the TVET program. Item 29 is in the Department of Natural Resources. So this is two positions and initial work that the department's looking to do to look at power diversification through renewable energy initiatives, planning work, and a building up of capacity to look at power diversification around the state.
Okay. Senator Hoffman, you have a question?
Yes. We had a topic brought up at Community and Regional Affairs and had a couple of hours presentation on micronuclear power, and there's going to be a demonstration project that's going to go into Eli Eielson Air Force Base for a little bit less than 10 gigawatt. And although In River and tidal for hydro and is good, but there are many communities throughout the state of Alaska that don't have access to this, and we're on the cusp of refining micronuclear power from under 10 megawatts to up to 100. So it would seem to me that we should continue to pursue this, because we're on the verge in technological terms of having this success in the next in the next decade. So I guess I would see us continuing to pursue this. When the legislature funded the initial small nuclear study 11 years ago, it wasn't even conceived that we would, 11 years later, have a demonstration project such as the one that's in Austin Air Force Base. But that is reality. So according to the presenters at the Community and Regional Affairs Committee, we are on the cusp of a big change that can affect reducing not only electrical costs but for power electrification, but also for heating, that can reduce the cost of energy in both those categories by maybe up to 90%. So I think it would be wise for us to continue that research and maybe do a demonstration project of our own, the state of Alaska coming forward. And I know Senator Murkowski has talked about it in joint session, and she's pursuing that and putting the federal money where their mouth is. So I would say that as a state that has some of the highest energy costs in the nation, we would be doing the same. So again, for the people that that I represent that have some of the highest energy costs in the nation and some of the lowest incomes in the nation, this would be a big game changer. So although this is something that should be pursued for the $262,000 of general funds, I would see something in the neighborhood of a couple of more zeros on this appropriation to pursue small nuclear energy. Just my viewpoint, if we want to have systemic changes for the lifestyle of the people in rural Alaska. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Next item.
Just a quick question, Mr. Steininger, and I see you got Steve Masterman online for as a backup if you can't. The 262, I understand that. Is that in, you didn't know this in December because the governor hadn't come out with his renewable, what do you call it? Some renewable.
Renewable portfolio standards.
Okay. Yeah. So is this a direct, is this 262 in direct response to that plan the governor's put forward?
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, they all tie together overall. This isn't necessarily, you know, I think kind of leading down your question, this isn't necessarily something that would be in the fiscal note for that bill, but they do work in concert.
Thank you.
Okay. Next item.
And if I could just very, very briefly comment, Senator Hoffman, you'll see later on in our amendments, we do actually have significant investment with the university for micronuclear. So definitely you described it better than I could, though. Thank you.
Yeah, we're going to try to get done here in an hour, so we'll try to pick it up a little bit.
So items 30 and 31 are a technical adjustment to the item in the Division of Agriculture for the Future Farmers of America. This is just to add more detail and make clear that the department intends to add a position associated with the work they're doing with Future Farmers of America to encourage agricultural development in the state.
And then briefly, could you, do you know how many new employees the supplemental and the operating budget is of 2023 is requesting?
Chair Stedman, amongst this amendment package, we have 30 full-time employees and 4 non-perm employees in this amendment package.
And then do you recall in the budget submitted, roughly how many you're looking at adding? Ballpark, we won't
Multiple dozen. So we have multiple positions within in public safety. I can get you the exact number.
If you can get back to the committee on total headcount increase, would be nice. This is a data point. Senator Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The university is ending their relationship with sort of the Future Farmers and that. And will that grant that goes to the university then be transferred to the Division of Ag?
Through the Chair, Senator Wilson, this change in the Division of Agriculture is in response to the university ending its partnership with Future Farmers, and we're looking to transition that to the Division of Agriculture. You know, the exact nature of the relationship may change slightly just because it's being now managed by the Division of Agriculture, but we're looking to continue partnership with the organization itself.
I guess, Mr. Chair, if I could.
Go ahead.
But the grant amount right now is still going to the division, to the university, with that super high admin rate. So my question is, will there be an amendment to take that grant that goes to university to move it to Division of Ag so they can give out to the Future Farmers for those kids? It's all about the children.
Yes. Through the Chair, Senator Wilson, the elimination of that grant at the university was a result of the budget reductions to the university that happened over the last several years. So the money associated with that grant already has been removed from the university's budget. The activities that have remained have just been transitional activities, and now we're supporting this within the Division of Agriculture.
All right. Okay. Next item.
Next item is item 32. This is in acknowledgement of the Department of Public Safety's recruitment initiatives. They've hired more individuals since the December 15th budget to fill some of the positions added in the fiscal year 21 budget, which were only partially funded. So this is the funding associated with that, those newly added positions or newly hired. Item 33 is a change in the description for the Missing and Murdered Indigenous Persons initiative to just add additional detail, similar to some of the prior description changes, just to respond to questions and discussion in the other body.
Okay, next item.
Item 34 is a technical correction from interagency receipts to capital improvement project receipts, two flavors of duplicated funds in the budget, but just to correct a fund source issue.
Okay, and next item.
Item 34 is a updated description for the locations of where the aircraft section staff will be stationed.
Okay, next item.
Item 36 is an adjustment in the Department of Revenue inadvertently double reduced a cost within their budget, and so this is to add back in the that portion of the reduction that was in error.
Okay. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would be remiss if I didn't bring up the fact that the United States Attorney General has declared war for the enforcement emergency in rural Alaska due to insufficient or lack of law enforcement and staffing support in rural Alaska on many fronts. And I appreciate the governor putting in additional support positions in rural Alaska. So hopefully that will continue. You know, this only has two troopers ranges in Anchorage, one in Fairbanks, one aircraft position in Bethel. But the overall budget that the governor has presented, I think, is a good step forward to address the problem of lack of enforcement in rural Alaska. Hopefully it will get the attention of the Department of Public Safety, and we can see changes in that front. So I just wanted to point that out. Although we're dealing with supplementals for public safety, I wanted to put that on the record. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Any other questions on this? Okay. Next item.
So the next item, 37 through 42, are all similar in nature. In In putting together the FY23 budget, we are continuing to try to maximize the use of CARES and CERSA money from the federal government that can be used to offset operating costs at the Department of Transportation. However, in some of that analysis of those costs, a couple of items were omitted. So this is to make clear that those federal revenues are being used for operations of the Silvertip Maintenance Station, the Chitna and Birch Lake maintenance stations, as well as correcting the ability to use those federal funds for some of the salary increases related to the labor trades and crafts salary adjustments.
Okay. Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know I'm getting in your over in your lane a little bit, but you know, these maintenance stations are near and dear to my district, and we appreciate it. The district appreciated. I had a group of kids in from Kenny Lake that were very appreciative of having Chitna opened so they could get to school. And I won't go into the back stories, but they're very appreciative. But my question is, what are we going to do when are the federal funds, are we looking to UGF in the future, or do we? And lastly is, you know, I'll just speak on the other one while I got here. You got the Dalton Highway shift change. We know the shortage of Local 71 and how much of a struggle it is for DOT to fill those unfilled positions. And some of these guys that are working on the Dalton are have to come and roll right into another shift in the interior to take advantage, you know, to help out with Snowmageddon in the interior. And we've got to do something with the for these folks. We gotta get some parity in the pay.
Okay. Next item.
Next item is item 43. The department identified that they could utilize other funds rather than designate general funds for some of the rate changes, paying for central services rates.
Okay, next item.
Item 44 is another adjustment to the TVEP program. And item 45 is a small adjustment in the judiciary to address some rate changes.
Okay, we have a question. Okay, next item.
And the final item on this spreadsheet is just the other side in the language section, adjusting that ASME item I mentioned earlier in the presentation.
Okay, and then we're going to shift here some paperwork. I think we have a couple more items on the operating, is that correct? Operating language section?
That is correct. So on the next spreadsheet will be the one that is on the top, is FY 2022 Supplemental Governor Amended. At the top of the spreadsheet is a single page. And to continue with just operating items, we'll start at the bottom of this spreadsheet. The top is related to capital items. The bottom two items, items 7 and 8, are operating.
Okay, number 7 and number 8. So we'll do number 7.
Number 7 is the extension of a existing appropriation for the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute for trade promotion, simply extending the term date of that appropriation to match the term date of the federal funds supporting it.
Okay. And number 8?
And number 8 is an addition of $877,000 in judgment settlements and claims against the state.
Okay, and do you want to tell us what those are?
Yes. Yep. So, Chair Stedman, there were two judgments or settlements included in the original supplemental budget. Those were the recall Dunleavy versus the Division of Elections and the ACLU versus Dunleavy cases. The new settlements are Arctic Village Council v. Meyer, Blandford v. Dunleavy, additional costs on the Eric Forer v. SOA, Save Alaska case, and a John Doe v. SOA case.
And the what was the last case?
John Doe v. SOA. That is, aspects of that case have been redacted for, I understand, to be HIPAA reasons.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So, on the, do you have the dollar amounts of those? You list them off together, but I didn't. I should have scribbled them down.
Yes. So the Arctic Village Council v. Meyer, there are several payees here. So the total is roughly $200,000 between three payees. The Blandford v. Dunleavy, there are two payees, $220,000 for one, $275,000 for the other. In the Forer case, you have about $157,000. And in the John Doe v. SOA case, you have just over $40,000.
Okay. Senator Wilkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In the Blandford Belleville versus Dunleavy case, did the court find the state liable, or did the court find the individuals, Governor Dunleavy and his chief of staff, personally liable?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, I believe the members of the committee have a memo from the Department of Law giving some, you know, more specific detail on this settlement. So this was a settlement, not a judgment. So there weren't necessarily those findings. It is a settlement between the parties, with the state being the payer.
Okay. Senator Wilkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I read the decision that was issued in that case, and the state was not found liable, were they? The governor and chief and his chief of staff were found personally liable in their personal capacity, which means the state has zero liability. Is that correct? Did I read that case correctly?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, I would suggest that you read the memo from the Department of Law. The issue at hand, the appropriation, is to pay the settlement. That is, it is not a judgment from the courts. And it is getting a little bit out of my depth in terms of speaking on legal matters. But this is not an issue related to, you know, specifically the court making a judgment against the parties. This is the two parties in the lawsuit coming to a settlement agreement, and the case being dismissed.
Okay, just before we get going, because this is a subject of interest to several committee members and non-committee members throughout the building. Mr. Steininger, just, you know, don't answer the questions if you're uncomfortable. We recognize you're not the Department of Law, you're the Office of Management Budget Director. And we have invited the Department of Law today, but they were unavailable. So we'll send them another invitation and have the Department of Law come to the table and go over all the settlement and judgments this year. This will be one of them. And I recognize that it's gets into a complex legal matter, and you're not an attorney and don't represent the Department of Law. Yeah. So don't hesitate to, I don't want you to step on your tongue, so to speak, here at the table, trying to be helpful to the committee members. But I want them also then to feel free to ask questions, because even though you may not be able to answer them, I'm sure the Department of Law is paying attention, and they'll be better prepared when they come before us to walk through some of these issues, so we thoroughly understand what is being requested and what responsibility the legislature has in dealing with these issues. So, Senator Wilkowski, you have a follow-up, and then when you're done, Senator Olson.
Yeah, and again, I recognize that we probably need to get the Department of Law here. It's unfortunate they're not here, but I guess that's my fundamental question for the department, is why is the department paying hundreds of thousands of dollars on a decision for which they were found to be not liable?
Okay, we'll ask them that. Probably a list of other questions as they try to put it in non-lawyer speak for us that aren't attorneys at the tables and in the public, so we understand what's going on. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I totally agree with you that the OMB director, as kind-hearted and as helpful as he wants to be, is not there. And my suggestion is that this line item be deleted until we do get some significant justification for it from the Department of Law.
Okay, we can consider that request. Like I said, we will be inviting the Department of Law and we'll, at some point coming forward with this settlement and others so we can kind of keep a focused discussion on it, and then the committee will do what the committee does when we assemble the budgets. We have other questions on this this item. Okay, so we'll bring this item up at a later date and go into more detail. I think that concludes the operating budget and the supplemental FY22. We're going to take a brief at ease and change co-chairs here and go into the capital budget items. We are at ease.
Good morning. We're back on the record. We're going to pick up now with the FY22 supplemental capital. And so we're on the same page here on this top of the screen, and then we'll roll into the 23 capital on our second page. Mr. Steiniger, you want to roll up to the top of the page, I believe?
Thank you. Again, for the record, Neil Steiniger with the Office of Management and Budget. So to the top of the supplemental government page, the first four items are recommendations from the Exxon Valdez Oil Spill Trustee Council for projects funded through money from the Exxon Valdez Oil Spill Trust Fund. So this is the Alaska Sea Life Center project at $2.5 million, Chugiak Region Archaeological Repository at $6.3 million. Mike gets this pronunciation wrong, I apologize. Alatec Museum Archaeological Repository at $7.3 million and Prince William Sound Science Center project. Thank you. At Prince William Sound Science Center at $6 million.
Gentlemen, any questions on the EVOS funding before we move to the corrections or Commerce Department, excuse me? Seeing none, next.
So the next two items, items five and six, are adjustments to the cost for Department of Corrections projects. There's the Highland Mountain Intake Administration project that we spoke about earlier that has an operating component to it, and the Yukon-Kuskokwim Correctional Center Recreation Area renovations. Both of these projects were put forward in our capital budget originally. Since that time, the department has investigated managing these projects directly rather than going through DOT for the project management, and found that they would be able to save a considerable amount of money in those projects by avoiding that additional overhead cost. Projects in correctional centers are a little bit different to manage, and so having the department manage it directly is advantageous to the project. And so you see a $1.3 million reduction and $800,000 reduction to those two projects, representing about 10% of the total project cost.
We like savings. Senator Wilson?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I just want to confirm again, this project is not currently under construction?
Through the Chair, Senator Wilson, currently in the Highland Mountain facility, the department is doing this intake in a hallway. They're definitely doing, planning work and trying to, make sure they're, positioned to start this project as soon as possible. But they've not necessarily begun the full construction work on this.
Thank you. I believe we're ready to shift gears to the 23 amend. 23 Governor Capital Amend, is that right?
That is correct. So for committee members, the next spreadsheet we're on, the title at the top is FY 2023 Capital Governor Amend. I will again zoom in just on the right half of the screen with the project descriptions and total cost. So item one is an addition to the general obligation bond package. Subsequent to the December 15th release, an additional bond project was added to the bond bill that was introduced first week of session. This adds that appropriation into the capital budget. It's for the Kodiak Fire Station at $15 million.
You made a comment that this would be coming, I think, a week or so ago at the table. Is that correct?
That is correct. Yes.
Next item?
The next three items, 2, 3, and 4, are all updated descriptions to general obligation bond projects. We've updated the descriptions based on some of the community engagement and engagement with other committees on those projects to answer some of the technical questions, update some information on the specifics in those projects, and in the case of the Seward Freight Dock, correct an incorrect project description that described the wrong dock that is another project being worked on in that region.
Co-Chair Stedman has a question, Mr. Steiniger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's nice to see we've got some assistance to two communities, Kodiak and Enana, dealing with fire halls. I think it's one of the fundamental things that we've worked on over the years here all across the state, helping assist communities with fire halls for protection of every man, woman, and child in the area that the fire halls service. So I'm glad to see those. I'm not supportive of a GO bond package. I am supportive of including these, Mr. Chairman, in the normal capital budget cycle, and we can get into that later, and the committee will decide what they decide. Am I safe to assume then that the administration is looking positively at potential inclusion of fire halls and those type of safety structures for maintenance and possibly new construction? I think this is a replacement on Kodiak of an earthquake damage. Nanana, I'm not sure if it's a dilapidated one or not, but clearly there's some dilapidated firehouses around the state. So I'm just kind of wondering if we can get some feedback from the OMB director to help some of us at the committee as we think, put some thought into the potential financial assistance that the legislature may offer along with the administration into the fire safety issues around the state as we contemplate public safety issues with troopers and village public safety officers.
Thank you for those comments, Senator Stedman, and I echo your comments.
Can we hear an opinion from the OMB director? I'm trying to get a direction so we can avoid as much turbulence at the end of the or the, in the implementation of the signed budget as necessary.
Yes, through the chair, Senator Stedman, you know, one aspect of a general obligation bond package is that it has to go to the voters in the state for approval. And so with that, you know, as we put together our bond package, we're looking at, you know, statewide issues, issues that came from communities. But, you know, through the legislative process, as this becomes, you know, more of a public deliberation on the aspects of that bond package, you know, we definitely anticipate more public input on what a package that best represents the values that the voters of Alaska would want to pass. And so we're definitely here to work with some of that community engagement and make adjustments to the bond package as it moves through the political process so that it, you know, represents something that the voters would agree to.
Follow up, Senator Stedman.
Maybe I wasn't clear. It wasn't clear. I don't support a bond package for various reasons, and we'll get into that later. Didn't support the one last year. We have some revenue this year that was unanticipated, so we're in a position to offer some assistance around the state, not only dealing with our own deferred maintenance, but some of the deferred maintenance of our communities. And fire halls being a benefit for everybody in the community, regardless of political persuasion, age, or any other issues that, that the community faces. And I see two fire halls here, so the question is, you know, trying to get a direction when we look at the capital budget, Mr. Chairman, when we have to offer our opinion to you that's going to assemble a capital budget, is this something we should be looking at? Because the administration is looking favorably at trying to deal with some fire hall assistance around the state, because these particular two fire halls, Nanan and Kodiak, I support them in the regular capital budget. There's no question about that. But it's a little bit broader question.
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, the broader discussion as to how we finance some of these projects, really, I think, as you note, we all agree that the Kodiak Fire Station, you know, damaged by the earthquake, you know, really needs repair. The administration is still interested, you know, there's that discussion between the appropriateness of going out for bond debt. And, you know, I understand that not everybody, you know, is necessarily supportive of going and taking on debt. However, you know, the administration's position on this is that this is a good opportunity to take advantage of low interest rates, to take that surplus and instead of spending the surplus, saving it where we can earn more money and then, you know, paying down the debt over time would be beneficial to the state just through that arbitrage benefit that we get from the lower interest rates. It's more discussion on how we finance it. We're looking to utilize the bond package because we see this as the best way to finance some of these needs in the state. You know, the individual projects that fall into the bond package, I think, is a, you know, discussion that we have to have through the committee process. But ultimately, you know, a bond package is something that we see as the right way to fund some of these capital projects. And I know that's not exactly a perfect answer to your question, but I mean, that kind of is the root of this discussion. It's how do we finance a capital package that takes some of these needs, takes care of some of these needs.
Follow up, Senator Stedman?
Just as a reminder, the legislature is the appropriator. We decide the capital structure. That's our role. And we'll do, you know, our constitutional duties to do that. And we may or may not agree with any particular administration at the time. You know, I guess, get to the end point, as Senator Hoffman's mentioned many times, is really the legislature's business, how we get there. So just with that comment being made, I'll I am cautious on issuing debt. There may become a time in the future when we are capital constrained and we may need all the bonding capacity we can get our hands on. And today isn't one of the days we face that issue at all.
Thank you, Senator Stebbins. Others? Seeing none, next item.
The next item is the $25 million mariculture incentive grant program that was included in the budget in December. This is a amendment to the scope to add some additional details in how that money will be managed. This $25 million is a distribution of the state's discretionary money from the ARPA bill at the federal level. And the additional detail is that the Department of Commerce will work with the Alaska Mariculture Alliance for actually operating the grant program rather than the grant program being operated directly by Department of Commerce staff.
Any questions? Next.
The next item is with the Department of Environmental Conservation. These are federal funds, $650,000 for enhanced air quality monitoring. This is a federal grant that is not associated with the federal infrastructure bill.
All right. Thank you. Please continue.
The next item is a technical change to realign some deferred maintenance projects, prior deferred maintenance projects from prior mental health budgets from the Department of Facilities Community Services over to the Department of Health, where they're better aligned with that change from the executive order.
Okay.
Number eight is a new capital project, $1.2 million for research on Cook Inlet petroleum potential through the Department of Natural Resources.
Senator Stedman, and we have Mr. Masterman on line two from DNR.
Okay.
You got any questions for him?
Right. Okay. Well, first one, I guess we'll go down to the OMB director, and he can ask for Lifeline, I think, if he needs one. But I think it's a good idea to take a look and keep an eye on Cook Inlet. It seems to be almost a stepchild sometimes next to Prudhoe Bay. We've asked for the Department of Natural Resources to come before the committee and give us an update on Cook Inlet, the structure and production and potential. And one of the, just make a comment here, one of the concerns I have is we put a concentration in the renewable energy, which is good to a certain degree. But we also need to keep an eye on Cook Inlet Basin, where we've got hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars invested in Cook Inlet with a supply of natural gas that's virtually never ending for the amount of load that we have in the rail belt for it, that we don't disadvantage Cook Inlet of concentrating on other energy source development. So we got to just remember that, Mr. Chairman, we got a balance to do. Natural gas several years ago was the poster child of energy generation, and the evil one was oil. And it seems like when we made the transition from coal to oil and now into natural gas, now natural gas is on the hit list. And natural gas is substantially more environmentally friendly than a lot of other energy sources. So I just want to just put that on the table that when we get so excited about we're going to do all this renewable energy around the state, and I'm not referring to areas out in western Alaska that are stranded from it. That's a little different ball game. But into the rail belt, and we got to keep an eye on what Mother Nature already put in our lap, Cook Inlet and Prudhoe Bay. That's more of a comment, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you. Does this information that the department is seeking to get with these funds, does this exist and we just don't have it? Is it in the hands of someone already, some organization, some company?
We have the petroleum geologist, Mr. LePlain, online in Fairbanks. Would that be your lifeline of choice?
Yes, please. Yes.
Thank you. David, if you could put yourself on the record and answer Senator Wilikowski's question.
Yes, thank you for the question. Through the chair, my name for the record is David LePlain. I'm with the DNR Division of Geological and Geophysical Surveys. Some of those data exist, but they're probably lost now. The major players who were active in Cook Inlet Basin over the last 40 or 50 years, namely ARCO, Marathon, Chevron, Unocal, they've pulled out of the basin, and the folks in those companies, some of those companies no longer exist, and the people who were in those companies have long since retired, so the institutional memory is gone. So, for instance, ARCO was very active in that basin. They conducted a number of studies, but the results of that work is largely gone. And those studies are also dated. They're now 30, 40 years old. And so the answer to your question is some of the data exist, but the data have been lost. And so what we are proposing to do is gather new data that is highly relevant and make it available in the public domain to attract new exploration investment. I hope that answered your question.
Follow up?
Yeah, thank you. Okay, and I'm just curious if, because I know we've had huge incentives, exploration incentives, production incentives, development incentives. I'm just curious if those studies had been previously funded in any way by the state.
Yes, thank you for that question. Through the chair, we have received capital improvement projects in the past, and we have used those monies to conduct geological investigations in Upper Cook Inlet, largely focused in Upper Cook Inlet over in the Tyonek Quadrangle and on the Kenai Lowland. And I will point out that as a result of our work along with our colleagues at the Division of Oil and Gas, we were largely, significantly responsible for attracting Apache to Cook Inlet Basin back in the mid to late 2000s. Now, as you all know, Apache left without making any discoveries. They made a number of mistakes, but while they were in the basin, they spent a lot of money. They collected some new seismic data, so they had a positive impact on the basin. And my point here is our work in that basin was significantly responsible for Apache coming into Cook Inlet. And so by generating these new data sets, by being active in the basin, we raise the profile of the basin, and that will hopefully attract new investment, new players.
Senator Wilikowski.
Yeah, and I get it. I understand, and I understand how this could be beneficial. I guess what I'm getting at is if the state had previously in some way funded these studies, which are now proprietary, whether via tax credits, tax deductions, exploration, I mean, we've had huge, huge, massive incentives in Cook Inlet. Shouldn't we be entitled to that information without having to redo it for $1.2 million?
Again, through the chair, this is Dave LePlain. The work that we have done at the State Geological Survey and with our colleagues at Division of Oil and Gas, those data are all publicly available. We have released a number of reports through our website, so that information is in the public domain. I do not know if Apache, I mentioned Apache, I don't know if they received any tax credits, but I know a number of companies have received tax credits for shooting new seismic data sets. And those data sets will, some have become publicly available and others are scheduled to become publicly available in the next few years. So in answer to your question, a lot of the money that the state has spent has generated new data sets that are now publicly available or will become publicly available in the next 2 to 3 years.
Thank you. Senator Wilson? Nope. Senator Stedman, then I've got a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to follow up with Senator Wilikowski, this goes back well over a decade and a half, I guess, maybe even a little bit longer. The state spent hundreds of millions, sometimes $200 or $300 million a year in financial assistance into Cook Inlet, trying to generate additional natural gas to make sure that we didn't have brownouts and issues within the rail belt. And as I recall from those meetings and at this table and in Resources Committee, this seismic data and other data was to be turned over to the state, and that would include a lot of the credit issues dealing with the North Slope also. But here we're talking about Cook Inlet. So when you prepare to come before the Finance Committee to give us an update on the basin, I'd like you to make sure that you check the history of that data, those data sets, and let the Finance Committee know which data sets are now available, which ones are forthcoming, and which ones never materialized. As I recall, there's some that possibly never materialized, and that what's done is done. But we just want to keep track of that because it is significant dollars that the state has invested in Cook Inlet. So if you could keep that in mind, and also like to note, Mr. Chairman, that just for those watching at home, how valuable some of this data is in the Permian Basin in Texas. Some of the geologists went back into the archival records of the cores that were drilled in the early 1900s, like 1910, 1920, and that's where they found the potential for the gas development within the Permian Basin. Today was over the old cores, and then we in the had put in substantial dollars to be able to warehouse our cores dealing with Prudhoe Bay and Cook Inlet and other places for the archival records, so future generations could go back to these cores, find them, and look for further resources. So it is a very pertinent issue of concern at this table that we not only maintain those existing cores in the warehouse that we have them, but the data sets. So if you could help us or update us when you give us the update on Cook Inlet Basin on the status of that. And also I'd like to, we'll have you on the line, be prepared to discuss the competitive nature of Cook Inlet and if we bring in other producers, if they're going to have a market to sell their gas into.
Through the chair, your comments are noted. I believe our sister agency, Division of Oil and Gas, will probably be involved, or I anticipate they will be involved in that future presentation. But your comments are noted. Thank you.
Mr. LaPlaine, you've been around a while because you're dating yourself a little bit on your history of the department. So my recollection is the last time we had a good basin update was during Commissioner Irwin's tenure at the Department on Cook Inlet. Is that right?
Oh, through the chair, thank you for the question, Senator. I don't think I'm in a position to answer that. I wasn't involved in that last update, so I would have to defer to probably someone at the Division of Oil and Gas.
Thank you. All right, moving along. Next.
Okay, moving along to item 7, again in the Department of Natural Resources, this is a scope update and amendment to the $25 million in ARPA funding for agricultural incentive grant programs. This provides some additional detail and breakdown of where that $25 million in funding is going, adding some specificity related to the Nanana-Tochactic region. For some of the development there for agricultural incentives.
Senator Hoffman, then Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I totally support this scope change to address the needs out in the valley and those that are probably the interior on the agricultural revolving loan fund. But I think that to be fair to all the citizens of Alaska regarding food security, the rest of the state needs to be considered. So I mentioned one possibility being salmon. If we can replenish those stocks, that's an ongoing solution. So again, I think that in this category, the scope and maybe even an amendment in the amount needs to be considered so that some of the people that are living in some of the highest cost areas in the state and some of the poorest communities in the state can see that food security is a concern for them by the state of Alaska. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman. And so I don't have any comments now because you covered mine, and that's great, and we're synced up, and I concur with your comments. Any other comments on food security? Mr. Steininger, we got our, I believe we're down to our last action item for today.
Yes, the last item on the list, item 9, is $2.5 million for emerging energy opportunities in Alaska. This is for research projects at ASEP, the Alaska Center for Energy and Power within the University of Alaska Fairbanks. And importantly, this includes some of that research alluded to earlier on micronuclear development for the state.
Thank you. Senator Hoffman?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I spoke to this item earlier, and I'm glad to see it in the capital budget. Gives me a little bit concern that it's not an ongoing item in the operating budget and has to be fought for at this table on an annual basis. For those individuals that may not be aware, the capital budget is a one-time appropriation, and unless it's noted as a one-time operating item in the operating budget, is a recurring item. And I believe that this should be something that should be reoccurring. We've had, as I stated earlier in the meeting, we've had tremendous accomplishments in the last 10 years, particularly on micronuclear. And, you know, we have hydrogen programs being discussed, which is another alternative energy source. So although I support this, I'm wondering, should we include this item as an operating budget so that it gets the full attention of other administrations if the current governor doesn't succeed in his election, that we say that it is an important issue. High energy costs are something that needs to be addressed, but not just a one-time appropriation. So with that, I thank the administration for putting it in the capital budget, but I'm more interested in seeing ongoing as an operating item. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, I just have a comment. I'd like to thank the administration for bringing this forward too. Was it as late as last week that Director Holdman was down here and had a published report on small-scale nuclear that was going around the building for some different committee hearings. She completed that report. That department completed that report with no funding from the state. That was an action item that we gave. She did it. The department, her department, did it. And I'm glad to see that the university is recognized for their good work and with this coming forward. I will agree with the senator from Bethel on his comments to the tune of high energy costs transcend administrations and legislatures.
And this Alaska Center for Energy and Power is going to be key to lowering our energy costs statewide in this state, and we need to make sure that they're funded on an annual basis. So with that, that concludes my comments. Any other comments from committee members? Thank you. Thank those online, Mr. Steiniger, you and your staff today. And we are going to conclude our meeting at 10:50. And our next meeting is tomorrow at 9 a.m. And Chair Stedman will be chairing the PERS-TERS update. And our afternoon meeting is canceled. We are gaveled out at 11:53.